How does an artist who has focused on technology throughout his career leverage AI in his current and future works? To learn more, we are pleased to welcome Mario Klingemann to the show. Mario is an artist who is best known for Memories of Passersby 1, an autonomous machine that uses a system of neural networks to generate a never-ending, never-repeating stream of portraits of non-existing people. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 9 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. Art and technology. It is a codependent relationship. As artists, people who strive to explore and express at the vanguard of humanity, seek out technologies that enable new forms of expression, even while serving as comments on the state of culture and human progress. When we see the cave paintings in Lascaux, one of the earliest examples of visual art remaining on Earth, we are looking at art made possible by technology. Humanity's ingenuity in persistently capturing visual images was a remarkable advance, even as, today, it seems mundane and fundamental to our existence. In the intervening thousands of years, art and technology have driven one another, now taking the form of things such as artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and 3D printing. So, how are artists using the latest technologies in their work? Much of the mainstream narrative centers around how AI creates recognizable, traditional forms of fine art. The Next Rembrandt, a 2016 project funded by a variety of corporations, led by financial services company Ing, used AI to generate a new Rembrandt-like painting that was 3D printed and displayed. In 2018, the Obvious Artist Collective created Edmond de Bellamy, a portrait that evokes what might be called an impressionistic Rembrandt, and which became the first AI painting sold at auction by Christie's. Other artists are doing different progressive things with the technologies. For example, on the last episode of Creative Next, transmedia artist Stephanie Dinkins illustrated how she is pursuing cultural impact. Her art strives for persistence and cross-generational continuity, enabling people to talk to machines that bring to life the perspective of different people into a single agent. Her events strive for social impact, some targeting experts, which share knowledge and ideas about AI, and others targeting the general public, to broadly inform and empower, particularly our most vulnerable populations. Today, we're going to meet a new artist, one whose use of AI and other emerging technologies has been primarily visual, but is starting to pivot toward the textual. Mario Klingemann is an artist who works at the leading edge of technology, most recently known for his Sotheby's auction piece, Memories of Passersby 1. Let's start by learning how Mario developed as a creator who brings art and technology together.
Yes, I'm an artist. Well, actually, that was not always so sure for myself. So, because my past is like a winding road, and I wanted to create art for a very, very long time, but I always thought you have to ask for permission. So I have been doing stuff with computers, you could say, since I was a teenager. At the same time, I wanted to do I have been doing visual creative stuff as well. And I always wanted to combine that, but let's say back in the 80s, early 90s, it was not fully clear to me that you could be an artist using technology that way. I mean, there have been people doing that, but also at that time, let's say, information was not as easily available. Like you couldn't just Google it and say, oh, can I make art? And like, can I use a computer to make art? So yeah, it took me a while to get where I am. And well, where I am now is, well, yes, I'm using computers to make art. So that's a very short version. And especially I'm trying to use artificial intelligence to allow me to take it beyond what I could just do myself. I also, I mean, so let's say the very, very long-term goal is for me is to create these entirely autonomous machines that you might be able to call artists, but I am far away from that goal. But sometimes it's good to just have some goal on the on the horizon and try to get there. So right now you could say I'm creating my own assistants, which have some capabilities that I have not, but at the same time, it's still me who does the art, and the AI or the deep learning, machine learning is just some very powerful tool that, well, that is able to surprise me sometime.
I love Mario's callback to the Dark Ages. The fact that we take for granted how instant and omnipresent any information we want is at this point, and how that creates easy access to many new possibilities. Let's learn more about Mario's art.
To say what kind of art I'm making, yes, so it's at the moment or in the past, it's been mostly visual stuff. So images, videos, installations that have some kind of visual component. So I'm very interested in image making, but I don't feel like that's the only place I will always be. So for me, it's really more the deeper ideas of what is interesting to us. Like in the end, everything, well, current machines or tools and future machines and tools will do is still something that has to relate to us as humans, as, well, in the bad sense, you could maybe say as consumers, but or as the audience. And so, yes. I want to make things that keep us interested, that entertain us, that, well, show us something that, well, we didn't think of ourselves. Actually, currently, I'm drifting off more into the kind of text generation. Like, well, I'm not sure if you can already call it storytelling, this whole field where, because for me, that's pretty much what is a level deeper. In the end, like, a story is what everything boils down to. And as you probably know, well, now we have all these interesting models that are able to produce, well, something that almost looks like a text that makes sense. But of course, it's still far away from writing a novel or even a short story that is actually where we say, oh yeah, so this brings me through the winter, or this is a story I want to tell somebody else. We are more in the comedy, like, freak show level. But I believe that we will, like, this will improve very quickly. And we are already reaching this kind of uncanny valley of text. When you look at it, like with images, we got to that point a few years ago where you couldn't really tell anymore. And at first it was creepy. And then we have reached a point where everything is so realistic. It can be that realistic that you don't even know that you're looking at a machine image. And the same will happen with texts. And like in some cases, cherry picked examples, we have already reached that point. And of course, this will do something very, like, I don't know, strange to ourselves. I don't know. I mean, because we are still feeling so sure that we can totally say what's real and what's not. And we will lose that ability very soon. And we are already starting to lose it. I'm not sure what it will do to us, but it will be interesting.
It is interesting that Mario, who is best known for his AI-generated visual art, is shifting his focus to text. Last episode, we heard how Stephanie Dinkins' art is deeply incorporating text in the form of conversational AI. And of course, last season, we spoke with a variety of guests about advances in natural language processing. Mario is drawn to that which is a little bit still in the future, shifting to the next new thing when the future finally becomes the present. As AI visual creation tools are becoming more mainstream, he now sees AI and text as the next frontier. I look forward to seeing what he comes up with. At times, people question the role of the human in the creation of AI-augmented art. Mario, predictably, has a perspective on that.
I mean, it's still there, but it's getting kind of, people are, like, the more you tell them about it, is like, of course, but it's the computer doing this. So this is kind of all you do is write, is program a little bit, but the machine does all the rest. Of course, That's the typical thing. And of course, then the bit deeper one is that, like, this belief that you still have to do something with your hands to that it's true art, which is, of course, well, I find pretty ridiculous. If you look at particular contemporary art, is like probably 80% of the artists that you know, like the big names that live now, none of them do their own art anymore, right? They're assistants and studios and things that make them for them. So in the end, also they write a concept on a paper and then, like, just come for a visit and see how it's coming along. So in the end, I still believe that. Or you take something like a movie where a director directs something. It's also like doing something with your hands, that, let's say, the brush stroke is still visible, is a little bit of an antiquated concept. But I mean, I can understand it. And I also value a good painting. It's not that I say, now everybody has to do it this way. But I believe that, let's say, art is not about just pretty pictures. It's about challenging concepts and looking at questions that affect all of us in these times. And in our days, of course, artificial intelligence with all its dangers or hopes is definitely a theme, a question that affects all of us. So it's, for me, just logical to be that somebody or some people go down that pathway to find answers, or let at least show people where it could be going.
Interesting questions of definition dance around this narrative. In different media, the expectation of what a creator does is variable. On one hand, a movie director is joined by hundreds of other collaborators in ways large and small, yet it is the director whose film, the final product, is finally anointed. On the other hand, while the assistant-driven model is well known at the apex of the fine art world, there is a significant difference in value and prestige for something that comes directly and primarily from the master, as opposed to something she merely directed an underling through in her studio. Why is there such a chasm between these disciplines? The introduction of AI, which requires human head and hands at myriad points in the process, introduces a new vector to the question of creativity and credit. It might be a good reason to more broadly look at these questions across disciplines and reconsider how we perceive collaboration and the work that spawned from it. Let's hear Mario's latest thinking about deep learning as a technology.
The algorithms are kind of, let's say, distilling this out of the data, with, again, of course, all the problems of preconceptions one has about it, or bias in the data. Let's say one thing I have learned in the past 4 years or 5 years, since where I would say this whole deep learning has really exploded, is this question of multidimensionality. This is, for me, currently the holy grail. This idea that, well, if the machine learns something, what you always have is whatever you try to teach it gets kind of projected into this multidimensional space. And from that multidimensional space, you kind of extract, information out again by, let's say, setting certain boundaries. But the fascinating thing is that we as humans have this desire to get clear answers, or to say black and white, true and false. But if you look at the raw data, it is just this continuous space. And only by asking but I want to know, is this a dog or is this a cat? Then you have at some point to define a boundary or a threshold, which is almost arbitrary. I mean, the data defines it somehow, but there's never a clear edge. I like this idea of if we can take this multidimensional thinking at least into our consideration, and always thinking, yes, so hard categories are actually a very human invention, or it's kind of our desire to be certain, but there is never certainty. So this is what I like. And of course, labels on things is not always, is a human thing. It's not a machine thing.
The idea that multidimensional thinking requires moving away from hard and specific human definitions, from the crisp boxes we are drawn to put things into, is an interesting notion. In learning more about humanity and theories of social evolution and development, I've been struck by the reality that we exist in a continuum and are rarely just one thing or in just one place in our development and being. I can both, for example, exhibit wisdom and patience with my children, and shortly thereafter yell incoherently at the driver who is frustrating me on the highway. I am neither a sage nor a hothead, or maybe I'm both, and so much more. Yet that is not how other people, beyond those who know me best, see me. They reduce me to something simple, something black and white, because their general lack of interest in me, combined with their limited cognitive capacities, require that I be reduced. Machines, processing power notwithstanding, don't have those limitations. They can consistently and at scale exhibit multidimensional thinking over all the data they survey. Beyond our thinking about how best to leverage and extend the tools thanks to these abilities, we should learn from their facility in these ways and attempt to be less black and white in our own framing of other people and the world. Let's hear Mario talk about how this more limited thinking has impacted the world of art.
Well, I think, well, maybe that's kind of my, I love organizing things. I mean, that's kind of like, in some cases, I'm contradicting myself. But of course, like once you have, let's say, a data set, it is my desire to find some order in it. But it's there are very, very different types of orders you can put in anything. And so there's maybe the common one, but then there are also others in which you order things. Well, I don't know. In art, yes. So the typical, let's say the classical order of art was always to put things, order things by time and maybe by genres or by artists. But maybe I'm much less interested in if two paintings were made in the same time, but I see, oh yes, this is also, it's the same tree, or it was, as we all have associations, and oh, this reminds me of that. And so having the ability now to go through hundreds of thousands of artworks or artifacts and with the help of code and certain machine learning techniques, create your own new system or allow others to do that. It gives you some agency, or it allows you to say, no, actually, I think you, like, there are different ways to present art, which is maybe closer to the way I perceive it. And also, let's say these typical classical systems also have always the problem that usually those who are already popular get more popular, and other people or other artists or other anything kind of falls between the cracks. And so if you take away certain features, the other features might be more, have more influence, and that way things that have been overlooked have the chance to, well, to get in front of our eyes. In the end, every art wants to be seen, and so I want to give things that have had less stage time to get more, yeah, more visibility. So because in the end, sometimes it feels like why a certain piece of art is being appreciated is also just a matter of luck. Of course, there are pieces which are a very high quality, but then again, I believe that there's a certain amount of pieces which could be just as much as appreciated, and they just were unlucky to be a bit too late. I don't know, not in the right town. So they just didn't have the same chances to get visible. And then at some point, it's just like they fell off the train.
Mario's best known work to date is Memories of Passersby 1, which was auctioned at Sotheby's last year. To help you better visualize it, Memories of Passersby 1 is an autonomous machine that uses a system of neural networks to generate a never-ending, never-repeating stream of portraits of non-existing people forever, or at least until the power supply is cut or something breaks. Let's learn more about it.
Memories of Passersby was my idea that if I could create a piece that is autonomous in a certain sense. I mean, it's as I mentioned before, I want to go for a fully autonomous piece, but in this case, I wanted to create something that keeps on creating, in this case, portraits and never repeats and stays surprising. And so in the end, like, this piece consists of a computer that houses several GANs that work in a feedback loop and continuously create portraits. And so the idea is that when you, well, you're actually there to see it, you are facing this infinite stream of very slowly changing portraits that are actually being made in the moment you watch them. So also, so if you're alone in the room and you see something, you will have been the only person who has ever seen this. The other idea is that it's supposed to be a long-term piece, right? So it's not just for a day or two, but it's supposed to work for years. And the idea is that it stays surprising in some sense, even though it still it's just making portraits. When we look at it and see it for a while, we get a certain idea like, okay, what will happen next? And I like the idea that you come back in a day or two and you will actually see some new portrait that doesn't fit into how you estimated this system would evolve. And so actually one of the pieces is at one of my collectors' homes, and she just told me she's the one who commissioned the first one, and she's still happy with it because like she comes in every morning and sees it, and it's a new face and it still hasn't kind of grown old on her, or she's still being surprised, which makes me happy, because when you build a complicated system like this, and in the end I'm also limited in my abilities to foresee how it will develop, so that's the tricky part, that I try to build something that keeps on changing but of course shouldn't break or shouldn't drift off into an area where it's totally just noise. And yeah, but it seems like this balance between creating something familiar, but at the same time being surprising and renewing all the time, seems to work. But yeah, I think I always say this piece is like a bit like a child that I try to educate and give some values, but at some point I have to cut the cord and send it out in the world, and I hope it will keep on doing what I told it to. So that's kind of, unlike a painting where when it's done, you know, it will look the same in 20 or 50 years. In this case, it is a little bit alive.
Mario mentioned GANs, or Generative Adversarial Networks. That is an important technology that we should all know a little about. Let's listen.
They are not like a database of recalling certain things that you, like pulling an old image out of the database and saying, here's another portrait. But they are actually trying to learn, in the case of portraits, how a portrait is made. So it learns that eyes come in a certain statistical distribution, and skin color, hair, that there are certain proportions about faces. So as simple as it sounds, like by just shaping playing around, experimenting with different types of data, with different architectures, it is really, it gives you a lot of creative space and so room to kind of get very different results. And then of course, in the next step, once you have trained again, like some people are then just using it and using it to create infinite amounts of images. But for me, usually the process only starts then, and one GAN becomes almost like a Lego brick that I then combine with other bricks and build all these pipelines where complexity quickly starts building up on. So what one model creates, the other one deforms. And then I really like playing with feedback loops. So at some point I feed the output of the sixth model back into the input of the first. Then we come to these systems which start behaving hopefully in an interesting way. So it's often they just break. So with any kind of these looped systems, then it becomes about finding the sweet spots in which you get kind of a beautiful balance between almost chaos and something that died and is just like producing a black screen. So, and it is, you have to use a lot of gut feeling there, because these systems are so complex that you cannot really say, okay, I changed this number and it's really turning knobs here, turning knobs there. Maybe like with synthesizers, analog synthesizers. You learn by experience that it goes in this direction, but then there could always be something really strange happening around the corner. in the end you have this empty hull and then you fill it by training it. But then there's also all these public models which take so much computation that somebody like me who doesn't have access to or the money to train them could not train them themselves, because it's kind of like, I don't know, it's cost crazy amount of money to train them. But these models are also so complex that in the end you can release that one model and everybody who takes it will get something different out of it. So it becomes like a universe by itself. And so with the text, it is very fascinating. The way you usually use them is you trigger them with some text. You prime them, you give them, 500 chars, some text, and then they will try to continue to do more in that direction. But then again, the process becomes figuring out, okay, how do I have to shape this input vector to get something interesting out?
The human element in setting up a GAN properly is essential. It is a variant of the old axiom, good data in, good data out. As much as we call machines smart or artificial intelligence, they are just a more complicated tool for a human to use. We may not think of a brush, paints, and canvas as technology, but they are on the same continuum as the palette of things Mario used in making memories. What is Mario playing around with using these technologies?
The other thing is I made these fake interviews with an artist, and like the whole interview is then generated by the machine. And it's interesting because, of course, then you start feeding the output of the model back into its input, and it keeps on doing these things. And then, well, the question is, okay, how can I've tried to find ways how to shape it further, how to take this and maybe filter it, adjust what it says. So that's currently ongoing experimentation, again, to see, because almost it is still a little bit uncontrollable. So you can direct it in a certain way, but then, well, if you don't like it, it's not, you just have to try again. And of course, then I am still the one looking at the text and deciding, does this make sense or is this funny? Is this interesting? So the next step is, of course, for another algorithm to determine if whatever it has given me fits into whatever current theme I'm working on. So it's, but of course, this is, let's say, one building block. And further explorations will, of course, go into, okay, when I have this story, can I turn this into a movie? Can I turn it into a comic book? Can I make music from it? That's kind of what it always boils down to me, that you have these latent spaces, these abstract multidimensional spaces, which in theory can become this universal translation spaces. So in one side you put text in and you get images out, or you feed an image in and then you translate it into text. In the end, all information becomes one in these spaces. And well, the hope is, of course, always to extract something out of it which is enlightening to us, makes us happy or makes us wonder. So, and yeah, that's ongoing search, which probably will never end. I mean, the whole part of is that the search is so enjoyable for me. I never want that search to end.
Perhaps. But of course, everything does eventually end. And as an artist who thrives in the new and unexplored, Mario is sensitive to how the landscape is shifting.
Well, what I can already see is that unlike 2-3 years ago, now we have these practical tools become part of the tool sets of people who are not programmers. So the ability to play with latent spaces gets into the hands of everybody. So, and whilst in some sense, as I mentioned before, I'm a bit sad that I'm now not the only one to do it. Of course, it is of course a good thing, because other people who are maybe have a less technical background have very different ways of creating art. So in the end, the topics that will be covered, the type of art that will be created with the help of these tools will, well, it's great that it's out there. Just like the camera made it into the hands of the whole world. Initially, it was just in some kind of like a few people's hands. I mean, it's always hard to see how it will change our world, but it definitely will. And so one of my hopes is, yes, that this multidimensional thinking might make it more into the general thinking. Of course, there are the dangers as well, that, well, some things become very simple to do now, where it needed, maybe a few years ago, it still needed somebody who was doing a certain thing as their job. So let's say, I don't know, the whole field of create masking photos. I don't know. That's a whole business, right? There, people are paying somebody to do this for them. And some of these tasks are, well, can be replaced by a click of a button. And it will get more deeper, right? Like, I mean, make me a layout. Where we thought, no, this is only what humans can do. And simple mechanical things that can be replaced by a machine, that they will be. And so, of course, this will... Some people will have a hard time finding stuff that they can still get paid for. So that will be very tricky. And I don't know how this can change. So, I mean, how it could be prevented. So hopefully, again, there will be new things that are needed. But of course, at some point, yeah, you could say, yes, we have to train the machines. But it's, of course, also not kind of the fantastic job. Or it will also, at some point, everything that needs to be trained will be gone. So yeah, in the end, I'm a proponent of the universal basic income, I guess. So that's like with more and more automation, at some point, yeah, human work is in many, and like everything that can be done with a computer, you could say, many of these things will be replaced by computers. So even writing, and that's the danger. So maybe either you have to make something that a computer cannot do, or yeah, we have to change things politically that people can still live.
On Creative Next, we talk a lot about how popular notions of AI making work obsolete are overstated, that the automation we will primarily experience will be in the form of augmentation that changes our job instead of eliminates it. Yet at the vanguard of this work, the magical things the machines can do open up questions about what would happen if jobs eventually start to go away. I like that Mario mentioned universal basic income, because that or some similar scheme that enables survival and some degree of basic comfort without compulsory work is a prerequisite to a world where the available jobs are shrinking, yet we still strive to maintain notions of equality, social harmony, and personal actualization. The good news is that the macro trend to social progressiveness seems destined to dovetail with a potential future with only limited work in a way that will obsolete the concerns we might today have about these challenges, at least in the wealthy first world. To finish, let's hear about Mario's concerns regarding control of AI and the most powerful future technologies.
The real powerful AI tools and the data that drives it is in the hands of just a few companies or states. And in their hands, I fear I'm rather pessimistic there. The best hope is that we manage to get some kind of distributed system where we are still in charge running, or some parallel system, which, well, I don't know how that could be started. But in the end, otherwise, the problem with all these techniques is that they make us so controllable and predictable in a sense. And of course, states like us to be controllable. And of course, it's in nobody's interest. We all still want to have our freedom and our freedom to do things and say things. And these technologies are now being used all over the world. I mean, you just have to, look at it, like how, especially with all the crises all around the world are now happening. But face recognition, analysis of social networks and how people are linked. I mean, that's where AI is being used for, and it's definitely being used against us. That's the good thing. Like, maybe learning enough about AI and its limitations is so you can evade these detections and being put in a certain box. That's kind of like something, a skill everybody should learn.
Thanks again to our guest, Mario Klingemann. So John, how did our interview with Mario impact your thinking about the work we are doing here with Creative Next?
I thought Mario's perspective was unique and interesting. in a lot of different ways. One of the things that struck me was a phrase that he used that normally we apply to thinking about robots that might look human or display human characteristics but are not quite human. It's called the uncanny valley. Mm-hmm. And it's this averse reaction, sort of this disgust that you can when you see this robot trying to be human, you know, it engenders feelings of aversion, I think, in some people. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting was that for Mario, I mean, he referred to the status of text generation from artificial intelligence as being in, you know, the uncanny valley of text. Mm-hmm. And so when he put those two concepts together, namely this idea that there was this somewhat inhuman, trying to be human factor associated with AI generation of text, which we know from whether it's chatbots or not so clever fiction generated by AI, you know, that's the current status.
Yeah.
The way he framed that, I thought, was extremely useful because he was bringing together these terminologies that we use to describe emerging technology and its evolving status over time. But he was just ignoring the general usage and instead, you know, applying it to this particular area, which, you know, he's exploring now, which is AI text generation. And so what that made me think about was that we probably need to talk more about where AI, artificial intelligence, so-called, is in terms of its capabilities, and it's similar to, you know, when you're, you know, describing any other sort of technology, you know, it's not ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. in a lot of different respects, but in some areas, you know, it's very sort of cleverly applied and leverageable and delivers lots of value for people. So I really enjoyed that Mario was sort of expanding the vocabulary of discussion by drawing from other emerging technologies and really saying, hey, look, these things are in flux. Let's talk about it that way. And that was refreshing for me.
Yeah, I agree. I really like your take on that, too. It's interesting to see how these things are evolving, you know, just over the last 9 months or so. Remembering back to season two, we had on Snigdha Chaturvedi and, you know, machine text generation from the things she shared with us recently to today and the things Mario is sharing now. It's just appreciably farther along. Like, this is moving in real time. Now, the text generator can produce more and longer coherent text than it could before, and that's a big deal. So this is a dynamic and progressive environment, and it's a reminder that we need to keep watching in order to understand the state of the art. What we've done a season or two ago already isn't obsolete, but perhaps is getting dated.
Yeah, that's a frightening prospect.
Well, so what did Mario say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
So I really enjoyed looking at, you know, there's some video of Mario's piece, The Memories of Passersby One. And it really, well, first off, I don't think I've seen a piece quite like that ever before, mm-hmm. because it's this, you know, constant generation of these new sort of strange faces that are juxtaposed with this very—it's this Swedish design for this box that contains the computer. So you have this box that looks like it might be at home in like my parents' living room, and then there's these changing faces overhead on the two displays. So it was a very different experience for me because I could, for the first time, sort of see that the machine was generating all of these things in real time that nobody had seen before. And in theory, no one's going to see those again if you're, you know, the person viewing it without, you know, videotaping it. Yeah. or what have you. So that struck me as a very unique take on creating artwork and it was generative in nature. So I do think that there's an awful lot of possibilities around artificial intelligence serving as a generation engine for, you know, as the tool set for artists, right? So whether you're a musician or you're doing film or fine art, as you know, Mario did with this piece, I think there's a very interesting role for the, you know, sort of generation engines. And that opened my eyes to that as well. So just by looking at this piece, I was pretty enthralled by it.
And that's a trend, right? I mean, there's a connect the dots where earlier this season, Lily Smith, architects are using AI as
exactly.
a generation engine. You know, going back to last season, Carrie Harrison and the things her team was doing around like mixes of cocktails, for example, that all at the end of the day was generation with, you know, various degrees of effectiveness. But that seems to be a thing, that AI is really good at generation, certainly in terms of volume. And in some contexts, at least, the quality is pretty good as well. Yes. So for me, in terms of what was a big surprise for me, hearing Mario talk about AI in a visual context being mainstream from his perspective as sort of a bleeding edge guy, to the degree that he wants to shift his focus away from visual to text as an expressive form, I thought that was fascinating. So just this notion that text is where the interesting things are, where the next cool problems are right now, I thought was a neat little kernel of knowledge.
For sure. Yeah, that's it surprised the heck out of me.
Yeah. So what did you learn from Mario that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
So I enjoyed chatting with Mario about his the path that he took to become, you know, this AI augmented artist, or however you want to frame his work.
Yeah.
And this idea that the computer was his palette or tool set. There are a lot of analogs for that in different creative industries, in particular, the computer and the laptop in particular play an important role in producing electronic music, which, you know, I'm slightly obsessed with. And there's this real struggle for people to establish themselves as legitimate musicians if their main instrument is the laptop, right? And I think there were some similar difficulties early on for, you know, as Mario was sort of establishing himself as this type of artist, you know, trying to express yourself with the computer, you know, may or may not resonate with folks who are, you know, perhaps more used to, you know, using paint or pastels or whatever it is. And so I think that's in our framing of the computer as this sort of universal tool. I don't think we really appreciate, you know, when people are breaking ground like this as a society. It takes a yeah. long time for people to come around to that. So for myself, you know, as I create more music on the computer and less music just sitting at the piano, it's sort of legitimizing for, you know, in my own head, like, oh, I'm still doing music. It's just with a vastly different instrument now. And those two forces are always bouncing off each other, you know, like, hey, you know, I should really be playing the piano and keeping my finger strength up as opposed to, you know, doing things in my, digital audio workstation, instead. So it was great to hear that from him as well, and I appreciated that.
Yeah. Yeah, the innovation from Memories of Passersby One, and just the, as you were talking about earlier, sort of the form and nature that that takes, has me thinking about art in my house. For a long time, I've imagined, instead of an analog painting or print, having a screen that was swapping out artwork so that there's some dynamicism to it. You know, the environment then changes from one day to the next or from one week to the next, whatever that looks like. Now, what he did is essentially that, only instead of rotating between existing pieces of art, it's offering constantly new and original ones, which is pretty cool. Now, I can't afford the tens of thousands of dollars it would require to have Mario make one for me. But I'm already imagining how the future of these, which 5 years, 10 years, whatever that time frame is, as affordable consumer products will be, and how that will change my living environments and integrate into my life as well as the world more at large.
Yeah, look forward to the kids' versions of those. I can imagine, when the kids are younger, you have all these murals that you can put up on their walls. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that being dynamic. That would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, building off the things Mario shared, what is a new form of artwork you would enjoy that could come from AI and other currently emerging technologies? Think about that for yourself, and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation. A new kind of museum, they believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most, healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is, that's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter, at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest Mario Klingemann, who is at Quasimondo. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 3, Episode 9. But here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
There's a macro trend, which is actually bigger than sort of machine learning or AI, which is for the professional working in audio, you know, the last 50, 60, 70 plus years has been a transition away from the technical problem domain to the creative problem domain.